and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The dock worker strike is over for now. The longshoremen agreeing to go back to work in exchange for more than 60% raises over the next 6 years of the contract. The issue of automation, however, is not resolved. That will be discussed at further talks in January. Here's ABC's Elizabeth Schulze.
This sweetened deal from the Maritime Alliance did come after some public pressure from the Biden administration and the president himself, asking these shipping companies to share their profits, to put forward a contract that would offer those higher wages.
The search for victims from Hurricane Helene is dragging into its second week now. At least 215 people have been confirmed killed in the storm and its aftermath. In North Carolina, they still aren't sure exactly how many people remain unaccounted for. At least 14 people were killed in severe flooding in Bosnia. Israel carrying out a series of massive airstrikes overnight in the southern suburbs of Beirut. They have also cut off a major border crossing between Lebanon and Syria. This is ABC News. In Los Angeles, a makeup artist is suing country music star Garth Brooks, alleging rape and sexual assault. Brooks is filing his own federal lawsuit. He has filed it last month, denying the allegations. The LA County District Attorney says he'll review the case of Eric and Lyle Menendez, the brothers serving life for shooting their parents to death in 1989, says a review could lead to resentencing, including possible release from prison.
Their attorney says a recently unearthed letter that Eric wrote to a cousin before the shooting backs up claims that his father was molesting him.
It was a real-time cry to his cousin that corroborated the abuse that was going on.
Another possible piece of new evidence is a declaration from Roy Rosello, a member of the boy band Menudo, alleging that Jose Menendez also sexually abused him in the 80s. The DA says evidence detailing sexual abuse was largely withheld from the brothers' second trial when they were sentenced to life in prison.
That's ABC's Andrew Dimbert. I'm Sherry Preston, ABC News.
I don't know about other states, but in Wisconsin, we help our neighbors and love our communities. But California mega millionaire Eric Hovde doesn't seem to get that. Maybe that's why he questioned whether children should be able to stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And whether people in nursing homes should be able to vote. Hovde called for raising the retirement age for hardworking Wisconsinites and making obese people pay more for health care. And a Hovde company even spent decades trying to demolish the building housing Madison's oldest family-owned bar. Something they finally did this year, shuttering a treasured neighborhood institution for good. That is not how we do things in Wisconsin. And that is why we can't let California mega millionaire Eric Hovde represent us.
Paid for by a Better Wisconsin Together Action. ABWT-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The American Red Cross in Wisconsin is pleading for volunteers willing to help the Hurricane Helene relief. 30 volunteers with the American Red Cross of Wisconsin have answered the call in recent days. Volunteers will get training. They'll have to commit to 2 weeks of service. Anyone who's interested can sign up at redcross.org/volunteer. Democrat Kamala Harris at the birthplace of the Republican Party Thursday, picking up the endorsement of former GOP Congresswoman Liz Cheney.
She possesses some of the qualities of character that I most respect in any individual and any leader. Courage, especially at a moment like this.
Cheney says she's never voted for a Democrat for president, but she says now is a time to put country before party. Cheney has called Donald Trump a threat to democracy. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Heartbreak in Milwaukee. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. The Brewers went into the ninth inning with a lead yesterday, but a three-run home run by Pete Alonso ended Milwaukee's season. Manager Pat Murphy said he is disappointed for his players after a great season.
I feel sad for our guys because they competed like they did, and it was, you know, but it's baseball. When you're facing a team with those type of guys, that's what they're capable of.
Meanwhile, the Green Bay Packers will try to bounce back this week as they play the LA Rams on Sunday after losing last week to the Minnesota Vikings. Head coach Matt LaFleur said Jordan Love will be another week healthier this week after some struggles last week.
You know, I think that's a byproduct of not practicing for a couple weeks. I thought just in our limited practice today, I thought he did a really nice job. It looks like he's just getting back into the groove.
Kickoff this Sunday against the Rams is after 3 p.m. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It is a little frosty this morning, but we'll be sunny and warmer this afternoon, up to 67 for a high today. Tonight, mostly clear, 43. Tomorrow, sunny, warmer, windy, high of 73. We could catch an isolated shower tomorrow afternoon. Then we're back to fall temp Sunday with sunshine and a high near 60. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 28.
Maggie Dawn.
Folks, you're just not going to want to miss this. I've got an incredibly special interview with Illinois Senator and Purple Heart Award recipient Tammy Duckworth.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on Air.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Well, not exactly from the Lake Wissota studios, but as folks can see behind me, watching on social media, the palatial studios of 540 AM WAUK down here in beautiful downtown Waukesha. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. 6:07 just about on this Friday morning. It is October 4th, 2024, 32 days now until Election Day, and it's another beautiful day to have you here in Waukesha instead of usually on Lake Wissota from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, on the app, on demand by podcast, or through social media. Thanks for starting your day and wrapping up your week. Right here, I got a question for you, especially for those of you who do watch on Facebook or YouTube. Isn't this lighting weird? It's like I had nice dark hair until I got here today, and then I go sit here in Waukesha. Could it be the Brewers have aged me a few years over time? Is that what's making the hair look a little different? Because it feels like it. I'm in green and gold today because I don't really want to dwell on last night. But Greg Bach is here, and we're going to have to because we're in the news business. We dwell on these things. And Mr. Bach, again, pointing out the dissonance of radio. We sound like we're right next to each other. In fact, we are right next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not like, you know, he's not like right here. I actually have to turn around like this. Everybody watching on Facebook. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Pat.
Literally almost giving him a piggyback ride. But he's in another room behind a wall. The magic of radio. I'd ask how you are, Greg, but I already know. Not only are we tired because it's been a busy week,
yeah,
a busy campaign,
yeah,
but then there's that baseball game last night.
Yeah, so the Milwaukee Comedy Festival is happening right now, and I was at the show last night, and I was watching the game, and it was 0-0 for what felt like an eternity. Mm-hmm. And then 2-0, I'm like, oh, here we go, baby. Seventh inning, we can make this work. And then I just watched it on the MLB app. slowly dissipate away. And here's look
for folks who didn't stay up. The Brewers lost. The
Brewers lost. They're out for,
yeah,
the season.
They're out. They were
lost
up
the Mets.
They were up, and then basically one swing of the bat from Pete Alonso, a 3-run homer in the ninth inning off Devin Williams.
Yeah.
That's what makes this so hard.
Yeah.
And they're out. But
they're done. And you know, I had so much hope for this season. I felt so excited. And it was a good season. I mean, honestly, when you look back, like, they were counted out in February.
Yeah.
No one expected them to do this.
Yep.
The only quibble I have is not even so much, well, it's more with the organization than the team, like the front office. Save the thank you fans digital billboards for the day after, not for the drive home.
Yeah,
I saw it like 3 times on the way home last time. Like, it's can you just let me process before you thank me? Ugh.
No. And I know this from having been down here in a trip that I planned months and months ago to be at the Riverside Theater last night, where I was, because last night I gave my wife her anniversary present. Well, I mean, I gave her the present a couple months back, but it was tickets to Air Supply. They were in concert last night in downtown Milwaukee. And we, you know, it was the first concert she'd ever been to, you know, almost 40 years. Well, no, it was 40 years ago. And we said, okay, let's go see them. They're here. It'll be fun. And it was fun. It was really nice. There were a whole bunch of peers in the crowd, shall we say. So I'm glad they wrapped up early. But there was, you know, and I could see the score on my watch, but there was a guy right next to me. He had the app on his phone and, you know, 0-0, 0-0, 0-0 all the way through. And then when the Brewers hit those back-to-back home runs, it was Jake Bowers and Sal Frelick. Well, he had turned his phone off because the concert had started and they're singing and cheering. But I can see on my phone, I'm like, oh, he's going to be sad he missed these home runs and we're going to be so happy. And then you could tell how many people in the concert were paying attention because, like, as either Russell Hitchcock or Graham Russell were talking, you kind of heard like a collective gut punch. like when Alonzo hits the home run, you kind of hear this.
And then they were like, okay, maybe we won't play that song.
Yeah, did that joke not work? I guess not, you know? But at that point, we're like, okay, well, let's enjoy the show. And we did. We had a wonderful show. We had an amazing steak dinner at Moe's next door.
Nice.
Moe's, a place for steaks. we're gonna remember that meal for a while. That was really good.
That's a meal that'll put you to sleep.
It did. Boy, we got back to the hotel room and poof, you know, took a little nap before getting up bright and early to be here and share this day with you all. But it is good to be here. It is good to be, you know, be able to mark a season for the Brewers that certainly went better than expected. I mean, who did we lose even before Craig Counsell? We lost David Stearns to the Mets.
Oh, we thought, I forgot about that until right now.
We thought Counsell was going to go to the Mets, you know, and we lost him anyway. Now we worry about who we're losing next. And Roger puts up on Facebook, bye-bye Willie Adames. And I don't know that I can disagree with that. You know, he's going to be a free agent, and he's looking at what's happened in the postseason since 2018. And, I mean, obviously he's going to listen to other offers.
Yeah, so. I mean, Moustakas, when he came to the Brewers in 18, he was just, he was okay. And then he had an amazing season. Then he went to, I believe it was the Reds for $42 million.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't want to lose Willie, but, you know, you got to make your money, and it just bums me out.
It's hard because, again, the expectations were low, but now once you set them, you know, you are the 3 seed, and you once again lose to the 6 seed.
Yep.
And at some point you say, well, we can't keep making excuses for that. Look, but it's not like Devin Williams is not suddenly a bad pitcher, you know. Pat Murphy is not suddenly a bad manager.
No.
He certainly can improve, you know, maybe a few things, but it's tough. But I will take this kind of a gut punch over, you know, being with the White Sox or any team that's going to finish last.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like those years when you're just constant cellar dwellers. I like having a little bit of hope. It does mean you get your heart stomped on now and then. And, I mean, come on, we know this. We're Packers fans. I mean, you know, in our lifetimes, we've only got those 2 rings, you know?
So, yeah.
So,
well, I think for me, just what it comes down to is I just like to see us move to the NLDS.
Oh yeah. I completely agree.
This getting wiped out in the wild card just doesn't feel good. It just feels like,
right.
It pushes that notion. People are like, well, yeah, but the Central Division, it's easy.
Yeah,
no, it's not.
It is not. I mean, to finish 10 games ahead of the Cubs and the Cardinals is no small feat whatsoever. Yeah. And again, this team performed. But now, okay, the Liberals got to stop talking sports. So with that, we remind.
You got to start now talking super left politics. Super left.
Oh, no, we're just done talking baseball. The Wisconsin Badgers play have a game tomorrow against Purdue. Pre-game's at 9 o'clock on Civic Media stations in Amory. Wisconsin Rapids are seeing Kenosha and Richland Center. And those Green Bay Packers are in L.A. to take on the Rams, so it is a late game, 3:25 kickoff. Pre-game will be at 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon
on WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, WRCO in Richland Center, WCQM in Park Falls. So we ain't done with the sportsin' just yet. The daily newsletter from Up North News comes out bright and early every morning. Christina Laurie has put together an edition today that talks a bit about fall being vaccine season. And it's not just about the COVID vaccine. It's not just about the flu shot. But there's also a vaccine for RSV. It's a common, highly contagious respiratory virus. It causes mild cold-like symptoms, but can be dangerous for young children and for the elderly. The FDA approved the first RSV vaccine last year. The CDC recommends it for everyone 75 and older, and anyone between 60 and 74 with increased risk of RSV disease. So be sure to talk to your doctor about whether the RS vaccine should be something you take this time of year, along with a COVID booster and definitely your flu shot. So be sure to keep all those things in mind as you take them. We're going to mix up the show order a little bit today. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is going to be joining us very shortly. In fact, immediately after this upcoming commercial break, because he's got work duties and can't join us at our normal 7:20 time. So he's been kind enough to join us at 6:20. So we'll get to him in just a bit. We want to talk a bit about this, what I think is just a blockbuster update from Special Counsel Jack Smith in one of the many Trump cases. But before we get to that, we have to talk about Vice President Kamala Harris in Wisconsin yesterday. Not just anywhere in Wisconsin, ripping Wisconsin, birthplace of the Republican Party, and not on her own, but with special guest Republican, former Republican, exiled Republican, Liz Cheney, somebody with whom she has many disagreements on the issues, but they have agreement on something fundamental. The only reason they get to disagree on the issues is because we have a free democracy, and that democracy is under threat like never before. So, Greg, if you have it, I've got one little snippet from Liz Cheney speaking on behalf of Vice President Harris in Ripon, explaining, the juncture at her history that has brought them both to Wisconsin, as it did on Thursday.
I tell you, I have never voted for a Democrat, but this year I am proudly casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris. Mostly, we're not going back.
So you can see that they understand each other, that, she doesn't want to go back. And also there's a lot of gratitude from people who, again, would not normally be supportive of anything that Liz Cheney has to say. But before we can get back to those basic disagreements, we have to make sure that everybody's vote counts. And that includes if you vote your current president out of office, that he does not try to overturn the results of a free and fair election and install an authoritarian regime. Liz Cheney gets that. An increasing number of Republicans get it. An increasing number of people who worked for or supported Donald Trump get it. But again, there's still a lot of work to do in these final 32 days before the election. Jim Santel joins us next, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin. When you're here, you're up north, even when we're in Waukesha, like this morning on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. All right, there's been some chatter about the economy and how it's getting a little stronger these days. Gasoline has just started to dip below $3 a gallon in much of the South and Midwest. It's just over $3 in Wisconsin. And its cost is nearing a three-year low nationally. Grocery prices that were spiking during the pandemic are not climbing in the same way, finally. Mortgage rates are down more than a percentage point from where they were recently. And the overall inflation rate has returned to normal levels, And that recent Fed rate cut is a sign that the government expects inflation to stay down. I love hearing about that Fed rate cut because it means that there's lower mortgage rates, there's lower car loan rates, and hopefully there's some lower credit card interest rates. Wahoo! For more Everyday Money tips, check out Work Money Media on YouTube. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
Matt Nair on air.
The vice presidential debate. Mike from Kenosha is on the line.
Isn't it the whole purpose of a debate to be on television for the public benefit? The narrative, questions, fact-checking, it's inconsistent at best.
You're absolutely right, Mike. Mainstream media is bailing massively by trying to both sides everything and sane wash everything.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this. Ha!
Next week on the program, we will have Congressman Mark Pocan, State Representative Jody Emerson, and former Wausau School Board President Trish Zunker, who's also an Associate Justice, talking about for her tribal community and others an upcoming Indigenous Peoples Day powwow in central Wisconsin. All that and much more. Kia Vakil is coming up in less than 15 minutes here to talk about the headlines of the week, but we are also very fortunate to have with us former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel joining us as he does as well on the weekends for Amicus, a law review that you can hear across the Civic Media Radio Network. But we have big legal doings to talk about from the week. Jim, thanks for getting up early with us. How are you?
Pat, good to be with you and Greg, and welcome to Waukesha. I'm about 6 miles just to your east, but as you said, heading into court in about an hour from now.
Yeah, I appreciate that, juggling your work schedule as it is. So, well, let's get into this then, because, well, tell us exactly what got filed this week in the Trump case and what precipitated it, this U.S. Supreme Court decision that precipitated it, and then we'll get into the actual contents of it. But what was filed this week?
Sure. So there are an awful lot of people out there saying, well, gosh, is this just the federal government, the Department of Justice, filing something because it wants to sort of muddy the waters here? And just the opposite is true. This is very routine. What has happened here, as you have reported on this wonderful broadcast, is that the Supreme Court said that a president has certain immunities and sent this back to the trial judge who has before her this 4-count indictment alleging that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection with respect to the January 6th events and before and after. And so before Tanya Chutkan can move on to a trial, she's got to figure out what among the remaining counts in this indictment can survive, what is got to be tossed out. And so in that connection, she has, as every judge has, a pretrial hearing a few weeks back. And she says, counsel, tell me what I should do. And the counsel for the government says, we want to file a brief with you, judge. We want to tell you why it is that nothing about the Supreme Court case on July 1 prevents us from going ahead on the now superseding the new indictment. Schedule this on for trial. We'll tell you all about it. And that's what he has now filed. At the invitation and at the request of the court, the important thing is that defense counsel also has an opportunity. In a number of weeks from now, they get to file their response to that. They can tell the judge what they think should happen here. And there'll be a reply brief also. All of this is very routine. It's a part of a pretrial process. It's not routine only in the fact that we've got a defendant who not only is running for the presidency, but also happens to be a former president who allegedly violated the criminal law of the United States of the United States of America when it comes to this prosecution. So once again, very routine, but understood as important for the future of the case.
So we have heard about the I don't know what the legal description is, but we've been hearing about like a quiet period that, you know, we're not supposed to have things like this before the election, but if I understood correctly, it's that they're not necessarily going to be new investigations that come up in the period before an election. This is not what that is. This is an ongoing case and a delay that was caused in large part by the former president himself.
Absolutely. And remember, this case was indicted a long time ago last year. And again, does the defense have an obligation or right to file motions and seek review on various pretrial matters? Sure they do. Sure Donald Trump does. But the reality is that this case was scheduled to go to trial in the spring of this year. The spring is when Tanya Chutkan can first have this calendared. And then there was a motion to dismiss based upon this immunity issue. We know what the rest of the history is. The Supreme Court takes that up. Appeals courts take that up as well. And we get a delay. I'm not saying that it was prompted inappropriately, if you will, by Donald Trump. But the reality is that his present complaint about the timing of all of this activity, that falls on deaf ears, because that is as a result of the appropriate delay that comes when you file the very briefs that he filed. And so this notion that somehow he is being mistreated by the court, they're doing this just before the election. No, he prompted that. He's exercising his rights. I hasten to add that in doing all this, but we would otherwise have had a trial completed probably even before summertime if these very motions that he has filed and that he is now continuing to pursue were not, in fact, a part of the record.
Well, and as well, you had a U.S. Supreme Court that dawdled. I mean, when Trump said, I have, absolute immunity, an appeals court smacked that down right away. But the conservative justices on the court sat on this for months and months. And then, in my view, invented something out of whole cloth about immunity. And if the aim was to delay, Trump's trial past Election Day, Jack Smith was like, no, I'm not sitting back. And turned out the filing that he filed this week. So, more to come. But let's just be clear on where the fault, if you will, is on the way this happens to time out.
And to add one more footnote, we've talked about Pat on this broadcast as well. This is a judge who says, you know what, I recognize that I have a defendant here who is running for the presidency. That's that is maybe not unique, but it's pretty darn close, right? But the other thing she has hastened to add is that is not going to change the status of this defendant. I'm going to treat him like any other defendant in my court. And that means we're going to go ahead and schedule this trial, schedule other proceedings here. She is treating him in the same way that every other criminal defendant in a federal court or state court would be treated. And she has said the campaign is interesting, does not affect, nor should it affect, the process and the substance.
And then finally, we've talked about the process. Let's talk about the substance quickly. There are things in here that we didn't know or note to the extent of Donald Trump's actions. Is there one, maybe two, that stick out at you as you read things that are newly filed or newly released?
There are a couple of things, again, that we sort of hinted at, we knew about a little bit before. On the afternoon of the attack, January 6th, Donald Trump sent his supporters a social media post that said that Mike Pence had let them all down. And again, in this brief now filed by Jack Smith, identifying that, for example, as an unofficial act of a desperate losing candidate, has nothing to do with the actions of the presidency. Along the way, of course, when an aide comes to say, gee, you're endangering the vice president, his safety, Donald Trump says, so what?
Yeah.
And again, all that coming out, going to his intent when it comes to the reasons for his doing what he's doing, that's blockbuster stuff. We'll see that at the trial down the road.
Without a doubt. Now, there's so much more that could have been covered today. Georgia's six-week abortion ban, a new FBI report on crime. We talked about vaccines. There are legal cases surrounding that. For all this and much more, tune into Amicus, a law review, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media stations around Wisconsin and on the Civic Media app. Thank you so much, Jim, for rescheduling, coming in early. Have a great weekend.
Pat, good to be with you as always. You as well. Take care.
Thank you so much. When we come back, Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. I'm Pat Kreitlow. You're up north.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
If you're getting a little seasick watching the way dairy has traded lately, Think seasonality. I'm PM Yankee, starting you off before the opening bell on a finally Friday morning. Quick look at what's happening in agribusiness news. Yeah, dairy, one day it's red hot, the next day it's not. Mike North, one of the primary traders with EverAg out of Platteville, says it is seasonally driven. Right now, buyers are looking for holiday supplies, and the fourth quarter of this year usually is the hottest quarter of the dairy year.
This time of the year, this is actually very normal. It feels a bit manic, but this is actually really normal. And it's what leads us often to those September, October, early November milk highs that we depend on to really push forward great opportunities. And so as I look at this market, it definitely doesn't have this step-by-step perfect rhythm to it. Cheese goes up, milk goes up, cheese goes down, milk goes down. Because right now, everybody's trying to get ahead of that next step of the seasonal curve and still satisfy this big demand that's coming at us really quickly.
Mike North with EverAg out of Platteville. Again, he expects that the fourth quarter will be where the magic happens for a lot of dairy. That's because demand during the holiday season is extremely strong, and it'll also set a tone for 2025. What did dairy do yesterday, and what's happening with the grain trade overnight? Numbers are next.
At CHS, we know what it takes to feed and fuel the world, to integrate a global ag and energy supply chain, to advocate for farmers in their fields and around the world, to build communities, invest in rural America, and empower rural economies. It takes courage, conviction, commitment. It takes the nation's leading farmer-owned cooperative. It takes a co-op. It takes CHS.
Corn rootworm is a ruthless pest, which is why Bayer is relentless in its innovation. SmartStax Pro with RNAi technology is here. With an RNAi-based mode of action unlike anything that's come before, plus two proven BT traits, it's innovation that equals the strongest biotech defense in medium to high corn rootworm pressure environments from Bayer. Talk to your seed dealer about defending like a pro with SmartStax Pro technology. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices. Copyright 2024 Bayer Group. All rights reserved.
On Thursday in Chicago, the barrel cheese dropped another 3.25 cents to $2.12. The 40-pound block cheese down 2 cents, $2.75. Double A butter stood still at $2.68 a pound. Fluid milk for November that goes into cheese unchanged right now, $21.83 a hundredweight. December's also unchanged, $21.17. December corn's down 2 cents right now at $4.26. November soybeans are up 3 at $10.49. Right now the wheat down about a nickel at $5.98 a bushel. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
It is a little frosty this morning, but we'll be sunny and warmer this afternoon, up to 67 for a high today. Tonight, mostly clear, 43. Tomorrow, sunny, warmer, windy, high of 73. We could catch an isolated shower tomorrow afternoon. Then we're back to fall temp Sunday with sunshine and a high near 60. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 26.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
She is performing in Wisconsin early next month down in Baraboo. Charo, what is the secret? Is it the music? Is it the dancing? Are your shows what keep you young?
Yes, I will never get old while music is alive.
Yeah.
You got to move it, move it. I have ants in my pants. I had to move.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Congresswoman Summer Lee.
The American Stability Act doesn't just address the need for raising of the wage. The second thing is that tax reform piece, shifting the burden from the folks who are working class to the not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen so many benefits in this rigged system, and we have to start to unrig it.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Deb Cronmiller from the League of Women Voters, Wisconsin, will join us to talk about the newest referendum you're going to see on the November ballot. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
Welcome back. We are talking now with Kia Vakil, senior political correspondent for Courier Newsroom, based out in Los Angeles. Kia, how's it going? Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday, Pat. It's going all right.
Uh-huh. We've got the clock is ticking down here. Four and a half weeks now or so to go. Obviously, you know, big news this week included the vice presidential debate. We'll get to that in just a moment. But let's keep in mind first that there is this election that's coming up in 32 days. Mm-hmm. And it is important that people have confidence in the election, wherever it's happening. We know that Donald Trump just this week, while in Wisconsin, when asked if he, you know, will accept the results, says, well, I'll let you know in 33 days, he said the other day.
Yeah.
Now it turns out, I mean, when you do something like that, people will follow along. And as I'm looking at all the states covered by Courier Newsroom, well, that would include our friends at the Gander in Michigan, where the head of the Michigan Republican Party is now publicly expressing doubts this far before Election Day. Key, I'm sure it's not an isolated case and a no less reprehensible one.
No, I mean, Michigan, like you said, the chair of the Republican Party, Pete Hoekstra, said last week that he was concerned Democrats will steal some votes, or the news came out last week, I should say. In a Senate race, and that it could affect Trump. And it's just, again, this is more than a month before Election Day. There is no evidence that this has happened at any major level ever in Michigan or anywhere. And this is the guy who, I should say, is considered the moderate new chair of the Republican Party in Michigan, replacing the totally crazy election denier who preceded him. But this guy is saying the election is going to be stolen potentially. And that's because the whole party now is just an apparatus built on, do you think the election in 2020 was stolen, or are you willing to say it was, even if you know it wasn't? And if you're not willing to say that, you're not going to be boosted in the party by Trump.
Is this the same Pete Hoekstra who was a congressman?
Yes, it is the same Pete Hoekstra.
He, a former congressman, is now the chair of the state party in Michigan. Yep. And is saying this crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Wow. Okay. Yeah,
it's not isolated. Like you said, Trump, he is in the past month or so repeatedly targeted the Postal Service, you know, and mail-in ballots, once again saying that, you know, there's issues there and that they can't be trusted and, you know, blah, 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 because the man can't admit he lost 4 years ago and is still, you know, creating excuses for himself, mm-hmm. Blaming literally everyone and everything but himself. But again, it's not just that. It's also setting the stage to challenge another loss, potentially. And that's concerning because we've got, you know, election officials who have been threatened and harassed, some of whom have had to take leaves of absence or retire. We have, you know, lawsuits in God knows how many different states trying to change the rules or, you know, pre-target vote-by-mail ballots. They've laid a groundwork to once again challenge the results. Do I think that will work? Probably not, but who knows? It's not great that one party just won't accept results when they lose. That's a real problem. And, you know, the fact that the entire Republican infrastructure has just accepted this premise is really, really bad.
Yeah. It's not a good look. And I think not just for, you know, folks who might not be, you know, predisposed to support Republicans and conservatives. I still think there's a fair share of conservatives out there that say, can we please stop this? Can we please recognize reality and try to win this election rather than constantly, you know, relitigating the last one?
Well, and the thing is there is a market out there for conservative views and, you know, Republican views. You know, I'm not the market, but mm-hmm. There are plenty. They could win on the merits. They often have in the past. And, you know, they often do that through kind of ugly campaign tactics. But, you know, this is just, I mean, it all stems from Trump just having the world's biggest ego and most fragile ego. And, you know, if you can't admit defeat, then you're really not that far away from democracy actually not existing anymore.
Yeah. Look, folks, the way to get around this is to cast that vote and then get other people to vote as well. The latest result from the report, rather, from the Wisconsin Elections Commission, because absentee ballots have already been mailed out. And, as of midweek, 99,000 absentee ballots had already been returned. So, you know, get those votes cast and then get others to vote. And, you know, there's nothing gained by throwing up your hands and saying, well, they're casting doubt. Why should I even vote anyway? Because that's exactly what some of these folks want to have happen.
Yes. And I would just note that the margins here really do matter. It's going to be a lot easier for them to challenge results if they're by 1,000 votes, 2,000 votes, hundreds of votes, 4,000 votes. If they're by 50, 60, 100, 200,000 vote margins, that's a lot harder to overturn. So Every vote really does matter. And if you think it doesn't, look at 2000 when George Bush won by 401 vote or 530 some votes in Florida. And had that number been, you know, smaller, or had an extra 600 people turned out to vote, Al Gore would have been president and so much would be different today.
It does. It's just that valuable. Okay, so we went from a former Michigan congressman saying wild things to current members of Congress doing things that are not helpful. When I think of the response from Hurricane Helene to, you know, southeastern states, it is clear that some folks have learned the lesson in media outlets, and that is to call out the Republican members of Congress who are seeking federal help now, but who voted against helping FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, when they were running into financing issues. Kia, it's puzzling, and sadly, it's still prevalent.
Yeah, I mean, Helene has been just a catastrophe. Like, I've seen videos and photos that I've never seen before in my life of the damage. And, you know, both in North Carolina, in Tennessee, in Florida, and, you know, plenty of Republicans, especially from Florida, one day before the hurricane hit their state, voted against giving FEMA funding. FEMA is literally only exists to help people in the aftermath of natural disasters. We see this time and time again where Republicans in Congress vote against relief for areas that are not their own. And then when something bad happens to their area, they want relief and they should get it. But the hypocrisy and the like failure to actually represent constituents and help people is staggering and honestly speaks really poorly of those representatives.
Oh, without a doubt, because again, you just see the rank hypocrisy when they're the ones who suddenly need help. I mean, they are the bad neighbor, you know, who refuses to help out in a crisis, but then demands help when there's, you know, a problem on their side of the fence. And I just, again, would urge some people to do better. All right, let's turn to that vice presidential debate and get your impressions on it. My first impression was to chuckle at some of the polling afterwards, not about who won, who lost. I've never really gotten into that. But the favorability numbers, where because of what we love to call Midwestern nice, you know, both, you know, Tim Walz and J.D. Vance saw their favorability numbers go up. And yet J.D. Vance is still, even once it went up, he was still underwater in terms of how more people, you know, have an unfavorable view of him than a favorable view of him. Is that something that he never was going to overcome, or maybe say with more truthful answers, he might have done even better?
No, I mean, I think he did a good job of pretending to be someone he's not. I think you saw the most palatable PC buttoned up version of J.D. Vance that there is on Tuesday night. Because on Wednesday, he held a rally and was his normal, aggressive, unlikable, you know, obscene self. And, you know, he did that because it's a rally that's not on national television. It's a rally targeted at the base. But Tuesday night is, you know, he was trying to reach swing voters. And so he, you know, came off as, you know, Mr. Sweater Vest, who is aw shucksing you and wants to be friends with everyone. And he did a good job of it if you're looking at it from a cynical political perspective. But, you know, yeah, and yeah, he did improve his numbers marginally. But the fact that he's still underwater tells you that most people, you know, one, see through it, and two, that doesn't override all the other, you know, terrible things he's said and done and supports. You know, this is a man who would ban abortion all over the country if he could. It's a man who claims to be pro-worker and pro-union, but has never done a single thing to help them. It's a man who, you know, because of his lies about his own constituents in Ohio, an entire community got bomb threats and death threats, and Haitian immigrants have had to live in fear for a month. This is not a man who should be given power. And despite, you know, the version of himself he portrayed on Tuesday night, you see more voters still don't like him than like him. And, you know, I don't expect that, you know, any of that will really matter in the long run. If they happen to lose in November, the Trump Vance ticket, I'm sure he'll run for president in 2028. And maybe then, you know, some people might be slightly more open-minded, but I'm skeptical because he has to be the version of himself that he actually is far more often than the buttoned up version.
Right. It's interesting looking at one particular survey by CBS, which carried the debate. When you broke it down by issue, Tim Walz got significantly higher scores than J.D. Vance on abortion, on health care overall. J.D. Vance got slightly, and I mean very slightly, higher scores on immigration and the economy, like 2 percentage points on the economy and 4 percentage points on immigration, you know, compared to 10 and 20 point separations on abortion and health care. I guess what that says to me is that if Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are coming at this with a slight lead in polls in places like Wisconsin,
yeah,
J.D. Vance and Donald Trump would have to do a lot more either to please people on topics like abortion or health care, or really show they'd have to open up a gap on the economy or immigration. And if they haven't done that by now, it's tough to see how they make that happen in 4.5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, every bit of polling and data I've seen shows that the gap on the economy and immigration, which previously was much more in the Trump Vance column, has shrunk, particularly on the economy. And I think that's because one of the things Harris has done quite well is she has repeatedly talked about this. It has been arguably, along with reproductive rights, the focus of all of her speeches. And so, you know, we've seen that lead shrink to the point where, you know, depending on the polls, it's in the single digits somewhere, Trump's lead on it, or, you know, close to a toss-up. I don't see any world in which Trump and Vance narrow the margin on abortion or healthcare. So I think what you're going to see is them really, really ratchet up the fear-mongering on immigration. We see them do this every election cycle, whether it's a midterm or a presidential, from the migrant caravans to the Haitians, the lies about Haitians last month. I think things are about to get ridiculous and really ugly in the next month, because that's the one speed they know, and that's the thing they always fall back on, that and fear-mongering about crime. And, you know, that's more easily doable when there's actually increases in crime. But with crime going down in the last year, that'll be trickier. But lying about immigrants, that's sort of their bread and butter, unfortunately.
Yes, very much so. All right. Well, let's close on with the minute we have left here. Just your own role as a political correspondent and an editor. We've talked about, you know, the great work you do editing my stories and that of others. When you're covering as many states as you are, are we now at the point of just covering issue by issue, or are we hearing more from individual voters? As you're seeing these stories come in from all the states, where do you think a lot of your work editing and writing is going to be done?
Yeah, I mean, I think really my work has been recently, it's mostly been editing, and it's mostly been focused on, you know, presidential race and how these major national issues are, you know, being interpreted at the local level. So for example, you know, housing is an issue everywhere, but in Las Vegas, it's a massive issue.
Oh, yeah.
And so really talking about that and covering that and figuring out, you know, what are the stories to tell there? That's where my role factors in. Or in Michigan, manufacturing, you know, union labor, those are big deals there. In North Carolina, abortion's a major issue because they passed a ban last year. And, you know, they have a self-described black Nazi running for governor. So it is a little different in every state. And yet the unifying theme really is, you know, one, people want more support economically, and what are the candidates actually promising? They're very different sorts of promises. And two, they'll just, you know, do you want more culture war, crazy extremism, you know, or do you want sort of just competent leadership that is going to be calmer and where you don't have to worry about what's going to happen every single day?
I like this, pulling back the curtain a bit on which each state's voters are thinking about particular issues and where this campaign goes in these final few days. So thank you, Kia. Appreciate it very much. Yeah. Have a great start to the weekend.
You too, Pat. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back with today's history lesson right after this. You're up north.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
When Senator Tammy Baldwin first went to Washington, the big news story was Y2K.
and we were partying like it was 1999. Baldwin has been in D.C. for more than 25 years, and after a quarter century, her values are a lot more Washington than Wisconsin. Baldwin supported providing puberty blockers and sex change surgeries to minor children in Wisconsin. And Baldwin supports forcing women's domestic violence shelters in Wisconsin to admit biological men who claim to identify as women, even though domestic violence survivors say it would be traumatic to be forced to sleep in the same shelters as men. Tammy Baldwin, 25 years in Washington has changed her, and now she's just too extreme for Wisconsin. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
Farmers in Wisconsin have always been ahead of the times, and it's no different in the mid-1800s. George Esterly was running a large wheat farm outside of Whitewater, but reaping his crop by hand was back-breaking work. Esterly invented a mechanical harvesting machine and used it in his own fields in 1844. He then won a Chicago Mechanics Gold Medal 4 years later. But was he the first in the country to build a harvesting machine? The answer is coming up. Esterly followed up his win by opening a factory in the Whitewater area, building the harvesting machines and eventually other farm equipment too. By the 1880s, 500 people worked there. So was Esterly the first in the country to build a new mechanical harvesting machine? Yes. This man's early farm invention lives on as a remarkable slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
For today's history lesson at 6:52 now here on Up North News Radio. It was on this day in 2000 that then the Dixie Chicks, now the Chicks, were the big winners at the CMA Awards, taking Entertainer of the Year, Album of the Year for Fly, Video of the Year for Goodbye Earl, and of course Vocal Group of the Year and Ready to Run, one of the many hits off of Fly, this day 24 years ago. On this day in 2019, the Beatles' Abbey Road album returned to number one in the charts in the UK, where it had spent 17 weeks at the top of the chart back in 1969 and 70. But again, it topped the charts in 2019 after being reissued for its 50th anniversary. I don't know if I'd mentioned this previously, Greg, but I think one of the last purchases I made of CDs was the box set of all the Beatles albums.
Mono or stereo?
Mono.
Gotcha.
And then, of course, shortly after that, no other CDs were ever made ever again. There are no more CD players.
Oh, yes. They were all closed down by the government.
Yeah, right. No, I have a way because I also firmly believe that I bought the last World Book Encyclopedias, thinking that when my daughters were young in the early 90s, that they'd really like having all of this knowledge in these books the way that I did. I had a 1972 edition of the World Book Encyclopedia, so I thought this would be great. I get the encyclopedias. I believe the next day they invented the internet, and those encyclopedias continue to sit in our basement, hardly cracked open.
Which one of the girls are like, no, that's your heirloom. No, that's your heirloom.
Right.
All right, I'll take A through L, you take M through Z.
Yes, we need, well, wait a minute. I need a few more because I need it to hold up, I need a doorstop. So, yeah, it's all that knowledge and it's just gone. Anyway, so that was why Abbey Road came up in the conversation here. On this day in 2008, Darius Rucker had been known all throughout the 90s, of course, as frontman for Hootie and the Blowfish. But on this day in 2008, Darius Rucker said, here's my new career, top of the country charts with Don't Think I Don't Think About It.
No,
not this time. But don't think about it. Don't think I don't have regrets.
Now, this made him the first Black American singer to top the country charts since 1985, when Ray Charles hit the top with Seven Spanish Angels, a duet with Willie Nelson. But if anybody thought that Darius was going to be a one-hit wonder, they were sadly mistaken. Darius taking what do they call it, the sophomore jinx from Cracked Rear View, the pop album from Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, yeah.
And saying, okay, well, if that path is no longer there, I'll make a new path.
That sophomore was called Fairweather Johnson.
Yes, it was. Yes. On this day in 1970, Janis Joplin was found dead from a heroin overdose at a hotel in L.A. at the age of just 27 years old. Birthdays today. Latin pop singer John Secada. Happy birthday. He is 63 years old today.
Fun fact about John Secada.
Yeah.
He only releases records every 13 to 17 years.
I heard Cicada, I'm like, wait a minute, it's John Cicada. Yeah. Anyway, here we are.
Jokes, people.
Susan Sarandon is 78 years old today. Alicia Silverstone is 48. Rachel Lee Cook is 45. Dakota Johnson is 35 years old today. On this day in 1979, Jimmy Buffett was on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine ahead of the release of his Volcano album. I had not read this one before. And I, being a Jimmy Buffett fan, I thought, I'm going to go take a look at this. I have to come back to it because it's really long and it's really good. And I'm one of those that did not read a lot of Rolling Stone, you know, back in the day, you know, like so many other young men do when they're growing up and they're ingesting all these, you know, essays. And I just didn't. And I'm reading this and the writer who wrote tons of especially country music profiles, and now his name escapes me. But he passed away about 10 years ago. And I just have a whole new reading list because I've said before, I love music writers. There's just something about their style. And here, this guy's following Jimmy Buffett around the Caribbean in basically his heyday, you know, his wild days where he's making records and also making trouble. And it's just fantastic. So I'd highly recommend going and looking for that Jimmy Buffett article from this day in 1979 in Rolling Stone. CCR had the number one album this week in 1969 with, here's the title track from Bad Moon Rising. No, Pat, that's not right. It's not the title track from Bad Moon Rising. That's Bad Moon Rising. The album is Green River. I considered playing the title track from that, but didn't. And Lodi was another one of the hits on there. On this day in 1957, there was basically a national emergency in the country as Sputnik became the first artificial satellite to orbit the Earth. It was unanticipated by the U.S., and it not only triggered the space race, which was kind of part of the Cold War, but really launched, see what I did there, an entire era of political and military and scientific developments. But while I wasn't alive then, I completely understand the freak out that must have came in much the same way that now I saw a video the other day about the concerns about, you know, drone warfare and how bad things could get. And it's definitely stirred up those same feelings of that lack of control over, you know, what could be out there. The U.S. met the challenge at the time and hopefully will in the future. Queen had the number one song this day in 1980. Record mogul Russell Simmons is 67 years old today. Former Brewer pitcher Kyle Loesch is 46. Packers defensive tackle Kenny Clark is 29. And on this day in 1986, Dan Rather was attacked by
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Old World Wisconsin's Maria Comiskey for some Freaky Friday talk. And it's a bar band Friday night, which means Terry Barr joins us with excellent tunes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Matt Nair on Air.
The vice presidential debate. Mike from Kenosha is on the line.
Isn't it the whole purpose of a debate to be on television for the public benefit? The narrative, questions, fact-checking, it's inconsistent at best.
You're absolutely right, Mike. Mainstream media is bailing massively by trying to both sides everything and sane wash everything.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.